Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I know that I speak the conscience and determination of the American people when I say that we shall do everything in our power to crush Hitler and his Nazi forces.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. So bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
Do you aspire to be a great leader? You don't have to be the CEO of a major corporation or someone famous to lead people. You can be a great leader in your home, your church, or your workplace. And today we're going to hear from one of the best minds in the country about what it takes to do just that. Dr. John Townsend is a business consultant, psychologist, and leadership coach. For more than 20 years, he's engaged with leaders, organizations, and individuals around the globe, offering them life-changing solutions to their problems. He's been interviewed on Fox News Television and published in magazines such as Cosmopolitan and Personal Excellence. Dr. Townsend has written or co-written 28 books, selling 6 million copies, including the 2 million bestsellers, Boundaries, Handling Difficult People, and Leadership Beyond Reason, the topic of our interview today. Dr. Townsend, welcome to Heartline.
Nice to be here.
Start us out by defining leadership.
The best way to understand leadership is that the leader has the job or the tasking of influencing people to work together to achieve something they can't achieve alone.
Mm. Okay, so everybody probably asks this question, but are leaders born or are they made?
This is one of those, there's no black and white, but I do lean one way or the other. I think that the make is stronger than the born. There are certain capacities a person's got to have. You know, you've got to be able to relate to people. You've got to be able to have a certain amount of seeing further down the horizon other people do. But so we're finding out so much of that stuff can be taught with the right skill set. There's a lot of hope for people that think, well, I don't have the genetics for it. There's a lot of hope for people to get the skill sets, and they can do a lot more. So I lean towards the made.
What about the person who's listening who says, I don't run a big corporation and I'm not an executive? How can this book help me? I'm a stay-at-home mom.
The book is really about what I call spheres of influence. And what I mean by spheres of influence is that most everybody has people that they are trying to influence to be a better person, to work together better, to achieve goals. So, yeah, you can be a Fortune 20 person running a $100 billion company, or you can be a stay-at-home mom because you've got some kids that you're trying to raise in the nurturance and admonishment of the Lord and trying to make them into nicer people.
Okay, so you said in the book that great leaders succeed by harnessing the power of both the external and the internal world. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is where the whole book idea came from, was when you look at the research from the... I studied neuroscience and the performance research and all these things to kind of figure out what leaders are about. One thing I noticed was that Leaders are really well trained on the left brain side of things. They learn about vision and strategy and economics and making decisions and good judgment, those sorts of things. But they don't get enough on the right side of the brain, which is where relationships, creativity, emotional intelligence, emotions themselves come from. And a lot of times a leader will go, well, I just tend to be the left brainer, so forget the right side. You know, I'll let HR handle that, or I'll let sales handle that. Or the right brainers will say, well, I'm the creative, spontaneous, relational person. I'll let all the CPAs handle the other side. And people certainly do have strengths, but really, God made us to be integrated. You know, Jesus said, love God with heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's being one. That's bringing all of your capacities to bear in an integrated fashion. So I realized I wanted to write an imbalance. I wanted to make an imbalance right, which means to give a book on what is the right side of the brain like, so that a leader could have all the linear, mathematical, judgment, logic strengths, and also be highly emotionally attuned. So the way I positioned the book was, you know, don't lead with half a brain, lead with the whole brain.
Yeah, and leaders really need to develop that whole relationship piece. I mean, that's a key part of leadership.
Well, it's funny. Now the research is kind of showing that. You know, a few years ago, people would have said, oh, yeah, this is nice, touchy-feely, kumbaya, you know, have a trust walk, but, you know, let's get back to the numbers. And what we're finding out is, and as the research is starting to come in, it's not even a question anymore. It's not even a debate anymore. The leaders who do not understand the relational and emotional side of things, their companies are not performing, and the companies are leaving billions of dollars on the table. Churches are leaving lots and lots of potential on the table. And so it's not even kind of one of those good idea things. It's if you really want to succeed at the highest level, you must learn this stuff.
Yeah. What about intuition, John? What role does that play in leadership? I mean, sometimes people do have gut feelings. Should they trust those?
Not 100%, but probably more than you think. Let me give you an example. Think about sometimes, because whenever I'm working with leaders, and I do a lot of corporate work and corporate consulting and executive coaching, a lot of these people have to interview someone, you know, for a position or a job or whatever. And think about the time you interviewed someone and they had great, great resume and great references and great experience base and all this. And you're looking at all the numbers and all their sheets and it's really going well. But inside you, you've got this kind of anxiety or this kind of like a queasiness. And you start thinking, why am I feeling that? This person's got great facts here. Well, it could be your gut trying to tell you something. And I can think of many times in my life and other executives' lives when you kind of override the gut and you think, well, maybe it's the pizza I ate last night. Forget about it. And then you hire the person and you find out 6 weeks later, 8 weeks later, that something was wrong. The person was culturally a problem or they had an attitude issue or a character problem or they were a silo thinker or controlling or they were a prima donna or a diva. The issue became, I should have listened to those 10,000 hours of experience that had went into my gut, because basically the intuition is a combination of some feelings, but also a bunch of feelings that come into one place that give you a conclusion. The guy, the social thinker Malcolm Gladwell, when he wrote Blink, talked about it like in radiology. Now, when you and I go to a radiologist after we, I don't know, break a leg or twist an ankle or whatever, and the radiologist shows you, okay, here's where your break is. I could look at that x-ray all day and go, I have no idea what you're looking at. But they'll go, well, you know, I've seen 10,000 of these. It's a sprain or it's a break. So intuition is a combination of lots of experience plus an emotional experience.
Okay, so what are some of the other internal leadership aspects that people need to notice?
Well, in the book, I talk about a number of them. I talk about the ability to have relationships, the ability to experience your emotions and know what they mean because your emotions are a signal to you, the ability to have creativity, to be able to harness your passion, the ability to be aware of your thoughts, and the ability to have meaning and transcendence.
Okay, so talk about harnessing your passion. Because people think passion is just something that you either have or you don't.
Yeah, they do. And in fact, a lot of times people believe that if I don't have passion for something, I shouldn't do it. And mm-hmm. I'm writing a book right now called The Hard Way is the Right Way, which deals with the fact that sometimes you got to do things you have no passion for, like, you know, pick up your socks. You know, I don't have passion for picking up my socks, but I better do it if I'm going to stay married, right?
Mm-hmm.
So passion's not the be-all, end-all, but passion is a guide, I believe, to doing things that you want to do well. And passion has an object to it. There's always a focus of passion. That for somebody to say, well, I'm passionate about art and science and sports and, you know, etymology and food, well, after a while, you just can't have that much energy. Passion's a focusing feeling. It's the one that lets you decide, I want to be a really good counselor, or I have a passion for being a pilot, or I have a passion for speaking, or whatever. So what you find out about passion is you've got to let yourself have a couple of elements. One is if people say, well, I don't know what I'm passionate for, don't try to figure this out in your head or taking assessments. You have to figure this out by engagement. You have to do things. If you're not sure you want to get ready to go into a second career, for example, then go and spend a weekend with people doing what you would think about doing. Spend a weekend volunteering at a psych ward, or spend a weekend sorting mail for a company to see what corporations work like. But you find out that God created this passion inside you, this potential to have passion. It has to have a context. It's like a latent seed inside of us. But when you have the experience, then all of a sudden it pops out and you go, I love this. I can't wait to do this. It's a spreadsheet, or it's talking to somebody, or it's creating a new car. But you've got to have the experience that teases out the passion. Then you've gotten somewhere.
Yeah, and I tell people that all the time. You've got to be trying different things to see which one you're passionate about.
It's the trigger event. The experience has to be the trigger.
Yeah. Okay, so if someone comes to you and says, John, I want to be a leader, what do I do? Take us through some first practical steps that would be helpful for this person.
Well, the first thing is, do you want to be a leader or do you need to be a leader? Because there's some people that feel good about themselves, they need to lead, and they're dangerous people.
Mm-hmm.
You should lead from a full cup, because I've got a good life, I don't have a perfect life, but I just want to help out, versus I'm not happy if I'm not running people around. That's what we call a control dynamic, and it's kind of sick. So
yeah.
You got to get the want versus the need fixed. Secondly, look out in the context of where you are already operating. You know, maybe a teacher says, I want to lead, or maybe an engineer says, I want to lead, or maybe a baseball player, whatever. Well, every organization and every endeavor in life has leaders in it. So you might be in an organization where that you need to go to them because they have an HR leadership training process. I mean, was working with yesterday, probably a $1,500 million company. They've got leaders, but all their leaders have to do is walk over to HR and say, I'm interested in leadership training, and then they'll do an assessment and take them from there. That's easy. That's just a phone call. You might not be in an organization. Maybe you're in a small organization or an organization that doesn't have a lot of that. Then what you've got to do is either go to the people in your organization and say, I'd like to, you know, bring you more benefit, get leadership training. And a lot of them will say, well, okay, well, go to this organization, or go to a Disney, or go to CCL, find a leadership training place, and they'll help pay for that. But my point is, get the formal training. Don't kind of make this stuff up. There are really good organizations out there that teach people how to be leaders, so you don't have to make this stuff up.
Right. How about values for a leader? How important is that? And how does that reflect in their everyday life?
Well, your values are your compass. I mean, they're the ones that tell you what's right and what's wrong and what all your decisions are based on. And every organization, I mean, if you go on a website, Chase, and look up any organization, they've all got their core values out there. Now, that's kind of a done deal. You know, our core values are excellence and authenticity and transparency and customer service and integrity. And you've got to have those. But in the book I talk about, there's something just as important as business core values. You've got to have personal values. And what are you? I think that every person who wants to be a leader has got to work out, whatever organization they're in, probably somewhere between 5 or 7 personal values. I've got my 7, and I try to review them pretty often so that I know that my own North Star is that way, so I can go, well, I haven't been spending much time on this value, or I'm doing okay on this value. So work out your personal values. Things like God, I mean, he's number one. That's a value,
mm-hmm.
My relationship with him. Things like relationship, or my own growth process, or being honest, or being mission-based, or dealing with my own issues. So you've got to work out those and then align those with the organization, and then things go a lot better.
So a lot of what you're talking about is this whole theory of what I think defines leaders, and that's emotional intelligence. Things like self-awareness would be at the top of that list. Is that what you mean?
You mean in terms of values or in terms of your and my whole conversation?
Well, just the whole conversation, yeah.
No, I would say it's a part of it, but I wouldn't say it's the entire part of it.
Okay.
The emotional intelligence, the EQ stuff that Daniel Goleman came up with, is a specific specialty part that's necessary. But there are a lot of people who have emotional intelligence and at a very high level, but they aren't good leaders. So it requires other things besides that.
Okay, but self-awareness is going to be at the top of the list for any leader, correct?
It's going to be one of the top of the list. I hesitate to say if it's number one
Okay. Because
there are so many factors, but I'd say it's one of the top ones.
Yeah, I was reading some articles in Forbes about this, and they were really pushing that whole piece. You know,
yeah.
Along with empathy, self-regulation, motivation, social skills, things like that.
I think it's more helpful than to say it's number one or it's at the top to say probably every leader has got to have, let me just kind of tell you my model. I think they're all at the top.
Okay.
Because they're just necessary. You've got to have the awareness of who you are and awareness of other people. But you've also got to have clarity of your mission. A leader can be very aware but not be clear on the mission. And they're just a very great, lovable, deep person who doesn't know where they're going. So there's got to be clarity of the mission. There's also got to be the ability to be able to be strategic and help people get from point A to point B. For a $1 million company to get to be a $100 million company, that's a strategic plan. They've got to be able to work on that. The next thing is they've got to be able to make alliances, to be able to talk to people outside their industry and have lunches and meetings with people to keep getting that outside information going. A lot of leaders are just kind of only in their own huddle of the people that are like them, and they can't really grow their organization. Another one is their own character development. You know, are you working on who you are as a person? Are you working on changing? Are you working on setting good boundaries and having your opinions out there and be able to engage with people and have tough conversations? So I look at it as kind of they're all important list, but those are kind of my top four or five.
Yeah. So would the self-awareness piece come into the character development? I mean, how do you...
Yes.
Being
yes.
In tune to your internal world is really going to be key, especially if you're going to notice areas of potential weakness as a leader.
Yeah, because if you don't know, if you can't read you, you're not going to be able to read
them.
Yeah,
you got some problems.
Yeah, that's what they call the disconnected leader or the leader with blind spots or the clueless leader. And, you know, they know the mission, they know the product, they know the service, they know the systems, they know all that stuff. But they're checked out and nobody can relate to them, and the businesses really suffer.
Well, how does a leader get a clue about that? Like, how do they see their own potential weaknesses? I mean, do they need themselves a coach? I mean, that's what coaching is about, sure. But if they're a conflict avoider or a people pleaser, that could really hinder you as a leader if you don't notice it.
I think every leader should require themselves to have some truth teller around them. Instead of a board that rubber stamps us, which unfortunately, there's still a lot of that out there. Yeah, okay, we'll go with that. Or, you know, not being in a context where people are, you know, just sort of like saying this is a bad idea. You need to form people, either a support team or a board or your Bible study or hire a coach. But everybody needs a truth teller around them who is for them and wants them to win. But their job is to say, you're slipping here. I mean, look at how Saul, you know, blew off the council, and look how David listened to council, for example.
Yeah.
So I always tell leaders, whether or not you've got high EQ and awareness or you've got low EQ and awareness, you need these people around you. And what you'll find is those people will say, you know, you're really, when I saw you ran that meeting, you didn't listen to anything anybody said, or you were just disconnected and you ran your agenda and people just checked out. And a good leader will go, I had no clue. I thought I was being visionary. And the coach or whoever says, no, you weren't being visionary. You're just ramrodding everything. Every leader needs those kind of people around them.
Yeah. Should leaders be interested in what people are feeling? And if so, why?
Leaders should be deeply interested in what people are feeling because this is the essence of culture. Culture drives performance. In fact, Peter Drucker, who's kind of the Moses of our field of managing people, said that culture will eat strategy for breakfast. And being aware of people's feelings is one of the key components of culture. So if you want your strategy to work, you've got to make sure that people are in or out, engaged or not engaged. The other side of it, the equation, though, is you can't be their counselor or their priest or their pastor either. You've got to know what they're thinking, but you can't solve their emotional problems or spend your whole day on how they're doing. You've got to be aware of them, help them as much as you can. I call it the 7-minute counseling conversation, where you support them, let them know you've heard them, how they're feeling. If they need more help, you refer them to an 800 number or a good counselor or a good church you know or whatever. But be aware of those things, because otherwise everything can slip in between the cracks.
Yeah, for sure. It's that left brain, results-oriented, outcome-based stuff that you think of when you think of leaders. But leaders really need to focus in on emotions. You talk about that in the book. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, when you look at the neurology of emotions, emotions are basically a signal. Like, for example, if you get a fever, you got 103 fever, and you go to a doctor, and the doctor says, okay, you know, you've got this fever. If the doctor just says, well, get rid of the thermometer, that'll solve it, that's not a good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor's going to say, okay, that 103 fever is a signal that you've got a problem, and it's either a viral thing or a bacterial thing, and they'll give you the right kind of treatment. Well, emotions are just, that's all they are, very simply. They're just a signal. Your feelings and the feelings of others are telling you if whether a person's angry or sad or anxious or happy, how they're doing. So the tendency in leadership is to say, well, don't trust emotions, just trust the numbers. And I understand that, because you got to understand numbers. But if you blow off the feelings, you're blowing off some very, very significant underlying information. Can I tell you a story about that?
Absolutely.
It's in the book, but I was working with a guy, and he said he was a large company, and he was an executive of the company. He had 7 people that reported to him. Five people that reported to him, that were his direct reports. And one of this person's name was, I think, let's say, Scott. Scott was kind of a hard person to work with. And so my client said, I need you to help with my anger problem, because he got angry. I said, no, you don't have an anger problem. He said, yeah, I do. I said, no, you don't. He kind of got angry at me. That's just a joke. I finally said, you just got normal anger. I don't know, what are you talking about? He says, because every time I get around Scott, I get mad. So teach me some help with my anger problem, because, you know, teach me how to do yoga, or teach me how to count to 10, or take deep breaths, or walk around the building. Teach me to help me with my anger problem. I said, well, tell me about Scott. He goes, oh my gosh, Scott, he's a prima donna, he's a diva, he talks bad behind my back, he's like, he doesn't get things in on time, he makes it all about him. And I said, well, gosh, your anger problem just became contagious, because now I'm angry at Scott. And I said, Bill, you don't have an anger problem. You've got a Scott problem.
Yeah.
The anger you're feeling is because the guy is a train wreck who's affecting how your business is performing. So let's deal with that. And so we had some tough conversations with Scott, and eventually Scott had to move on. And guess what happened to Bill's anger problem?
It went away.
Not magic.
Yeah.
The anger problem went away. Why? Because it was just a signal that he had another issue. So the tendency of leaders is to go, don't think about emotions, just think about positive things. But I promise you, if you're not paying attention to yours or somebody else's anger, yours or somebody else's sadness, yours or somebody else's anxiety, I promise you, you're missing really important information. You've got to dig at that and find out what's going on.
Yeah, and that could also go back to, you know, what you wrote about in the book about, you know, the guy could have been a conflict avoider. And if he didn't see that in himself, if that was a weakness, then that could carry through to lots of other relationships that he was dealing with.
Oh my goodness, you'll find the trends. In fact, what I challenge every leader to do is, if you don't know your relational issues, you better get to know them. Because if it's all just about working hard and keeping your head down and moving forward, you got to have that. You got to work hard to keep your head down and move forward. But if you don't know what your issues are, they'll get you. Are you a conflict avoider? Are you a people pleaser? Or do you disconnect and detach when you're bugged? Or do you run over people because you're so, you know, you kind of have this bull in a china shop thing where you're just kind of ignoring people's feelings? But if you don't know those, if as you're listening to this podcast right now, if you can't say, there's 3 relational issues I struggle with, you probably got a problem. Ask your spouse or ask your board or ask your people work with you. That's why 360s are so very important, to get 360 evaluations, because you find out what your issues are. The person who doesn't know their issues is a danger to themselves.
Yeah. And they have to be willing to receive counsel. They have to be teachable, all of those things.
Absolutely.
Something you mentioned in the chapter on emotions, I absolutely loved, because my book is about loss. And you mentioned sadness. And you said that people who are detached from their hearts won't experience sadness, and that's not a good way to live. How does that apply to leaders? And why do they need to know about sadness?
One of the biggest things I find out in the leaders I work with, I have leadership coaching programs around the country, in Dallas and in California and in Indiana. And one of the most valuable things I train them in, and this is by their report, not mine, is the ability to learn how to let go and grieve when they need to. Because life has got a lot of loss in it. I mean, you wrote about it.
Yes.
And there are losses of anything from people that we love to periods of our life that won't come back. A $1 million deal that went away and that window closed. You can't get that back. Health issues, aging issues, moving a lot. Life just has a whole lot of loss to it.
Yeah.
And it's how you handle that loss that's critical for you as a leader. Let me tell you the approach that most leaders do when they encounter a loss. It's what I call move on. They just move on.
They bury
it. Get up, dust myself off, yeah, and get moving on. I don't learn any lessons from it. I don't have any feelings about it. I move on. And I can't think of one thing that's more destructive to an organization or a leader.
Do you see that as a big stumbling block for leaders, John? I mean, especially men, because men are notorious for, you know, burying things. And
yeah, it's a huge issue. Not only a men thing, but it's a leadership thing, because leadership is about movement and momentum. You know, you want to take the hill, you want to take the charge, you want to move ahead. And grief says, ho, 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 stop and go have dinner with somebody and talk about some sad things that happened in your life. And they hate that because, well, there goes my momentum, there goes my movement. But I promise you, if you don't take care of that, then it's going to catch up with you.
How can people find out more about what you offer in the way of workshops, seminars, or coaching?
The website, drtownsend.com, dr like doctor, just drtownsend.com.
John, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Rita.
God bless you.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.